real, genuine, and useful conversation about slavery in American society. I think we're moving toward that. We're moving there slowly, but we are getting there. And I think the public is actually ahead of the rest of us at times. See, I think the media tends to be more conservative and afraid of these discussions than the public are. And if you look at the tremendous crowds that showed up for those exhibits, you actually see evidence of that.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Craig Stephen Wilder, his new book is Ebony and Ivy, Race, Slavery, and the Troubled History of America's Universities. He's a professor of American history at MIT. I also want to thank Katrina Brown, producer and director of the documentary Traces of the Trade, A Story from the Deep North. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Dina Guzder, Robbie Karen. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with host Lisa Loving. Today's topic will be climate change.
October 30th at 10 p.m., tune into KBOO Community Radio for a special documentary on the Neo Boys. This one-hour special features interviews with KT, Kim, Meg, Pat, and Jennifer, as well as previously unreleased Neo Boys songs featured on their double album retrospective Sooner or Later, which was released this month.
For Neo Boys, it created this huge loyalty.
I didn't need some kind of broad cultural acceptance.
There's a spirit that, from that time, that just stays with you.
That anything's possible. You can do, you can create anything.
It was a really great thing.
October 30th, from 10 to 11 p.m., the Neo Boys documentary on the DIY punk radio show Life During Wartime, right here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Thank you so much to everyone who contributed to our recently completed fall membership drive. Your generosity keeps KBOO on the air. We ended the drive Saturday at 5 p.m., about $10,000 shy of our financial goal. If you missed your chance to donate during the drive, just go to kboo.fm right now and make your contribution. If you did pledge and still need to send us your payment, please aim to do so this week. Thanks very much again to everyone who values KBOO and helps keep it on the air.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale. Full Circle accepts like-new natural fiber clothing, jewelry, and accessories for consignment or store credit. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont, and on the web at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com or fullcircleresaleportland.com.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
It is 8:05, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today we're having open forum, okay? Open forum. We don't have a guest. You are the guest. By the way, thank you so much for supporting us during the membership drive. It was beautiful. We are looking at climate change. It's 1 year after Hurricane Sandy, okay, and the East Coast. Rarely in our lifetimes do we see such a direct link between the local and the global as with climate change, right? What I really want to look at today is, what are you doing in your house? What are you doing personally in your house, in your life, around climate change? Two weeks ago, Multnomah County came out with, Health Department came out with a report on what people should be doing in their homes around climate change. And I was really disturbed by the media coverage of it. Because in the Oregonian, and I feel as though on Oregon Public Broadcasting as well, I like to think of them as our little brother. Is it okay if I think of OPB as our little brother? Our little brother. On the Oregonian and Oregon Public Broadcasting, the coverage was, when climate change hits, ba-ba-dee-ba. And listeners, check this out. Are you listening to me? It's here, right? It's here, right? Anyway, I really want to hear what you're doing around climate change in your house, because we're all already being impacted by it. And I'm going to talk about it a little bit. And listeners, you are the guest today, 503-231-8187. What are you doing about climate change at your house? And now I have a few quiz questions too. What have you ever heard of the white male effect? In climate change, swear to God, there is one. What is the white male effect in climate change? Also, research shows that one group in the United States is more concerned about climate change than any other group. Who is it? Do you know? Who is it? Amazing. Shocking. I didn't know until yesterday. I took the day off from work and just did nothing but read reports about climate change. And I was really stunned at the things that I learned. Who in the United States is most concerned about climate change? What is the white male effect? Okay. But what everybody really wants to know, I think, the people who are prepared to deal with it, is it possible to prepare for it? And is there any way that we can head off the worst damage to our own families and to our neighborhoods, okay? That's why I'm asking, what are you doing in your own home and neighborhood? Do you, listeners, do you work for an environmental group that's planting trees or rolling out some sort of environmental remediation? And do you know all the elderly people in your neighborhood? All these questions have an impact on climate change. So the number, of course, is 503-231-8187. So, listeners, you're the guest today talking about climate change. Did you know so that the great big gigantic Kmart, I'm not a Kmart shopper, okay? A great big gigantic Kmart is opening in November off Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. It's right across the levee from Snoozy's Hollow out there by the horse racing track. And they just last week unveiled their gigantic green roof, okay? It's only like the third green roof that a Kmart store has built anywhere in the United States. And it's totally fascinating looking. I work at a newspaper. My coworker went out there to take pictures of it. Only two television stations and my reporter showed up to cover it. Which, you know, I mean, we can all ask why that is. I think people don't want to deal with climate change, even as we're watching people in New York and on the East Coast. More than 150 people were killed a year ago around Hurricane Sandy. I think a lot of people in Oregon, in Washington, are complacent. People think that it's really not going to impact us this much. And again, what is the white male effect? I'm asking you guys. 503-231-8187, completely fascinating. Anyway, Kmart Green Roof, and they have this big thing up there that they have like a feeding, something that will feed wild birds up there. It's like a composting system on the great big new Kmart across the levee from Snoozy's Hollow in Northeast Portland. It freaks me out a little bit. Of course, that area is an avian center, right? It's a watershed. And you might ask yourself, why are we building a great big Kmart in a flood zone? Anyway, we do have a caller, 503-231-8187. We have Joanne. Joanne, what's going on?
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
I'm so glad you called. I missed you calling the past couple weeks. Missed hearing from you.
Well, anyway, the latest body problem I have is this, they call it tinnitus, but I got this hissing in that in my left ear that I have to live with every day, and, as well as a hearing loss. I don't know. But anyway, I just wanted to, maybe I'm complaining about this. But anyway, here's what I just have a short, because I know it's hopeless for me to say or get attention or support for any big problems in my life or the bigger picture. I see that very clearly anymore. But anyway, you know, my public housing was, what do you call that, privatized not too long ago. And I remember during Katrina in that Louisiana whatever area, that when the low-income housing was destroyed, my understanding was it was never replaced or rebuilt. Then I heard about New York City recently and whatever and that with Sandy was destroyed low-income housing or something there, and I understand it hasn't been rebuilt or maybe not going to be. But that's all I have to say because I know it's useless. And thank you for listening.
Thanks for calling, Joanne. I always love it when Joanne calls. I feel like she puts really hot, bubbling pots on the table that people need to deal with. So who is the group in the United States that cares the most about climate change, according to research? And what is the white male effect? They all have everything to do with what Joanne just talked about, aside from tinnitus. You know, the loss of public housing when catastrophic weather events take place, public housing that is not replaced, right? And on that, I also want to just, because we're talking about global climate change. Joanne just mentioned Hurricane Sandy and Hurricane Katrina destroying public housing. If you're thinking about public housing and global climate change, also global warming, think about what happened in Chicago in 1995. Okay. Who knows what happened in Chicago in 1995? We're just turning into this wonderful, fun, actually, maybe not completely fun, trivia game here. I'm going to go Chicago 1995. So we have another caller on the phone. We have Marcos on the phone. Marcos, what's going on?
Good morning. I'm speaking as a white male. I don't know if that's the right constituency in terms of your further report. But
go for it. Go for it, man.
There was an article in the Oregonian, of all places, some years ago, saying how many coal trains, and I'll repeat that, coal trains, were necessary to fire up clothes dryers. And I've, for years, not used a clothes dryer. I just hang up my clothes and try to make sure they get a little air. It sounds like a really silly, petty thing to be talking about, but the crucial thing is that you can't get your clothes dry in 15 minutes if you just air dry them in your house in January or February. But it will take a day or two, and they'll be nice and dry. You won't be using any of that coal on the coal trains that fire up clothes dryers all over America in the summer, in the winter, in the fall. And it's an enormous impact. It's a huge use of actual coal, which, as we know, is one of the dirtiest materials to burn. So for myself, I try to shrink my carbon footprint. I ride a bicycle. I'm not optimistic because I've never had a conversation about climate change with anybody casually. No one's if the conversation comes up, it's because I'm forcing the conversation. So I know that there's things I can do to reduce my carbon footprint. They're relatively painless. All it requires is a little bit of thought, and I do those things. But other than that, I've never really seen a public discussion as to what's necessary to be done, and it's not really in the culture. So I guess that's what I have to say.
Marcos, I'm so glad you called, and that's why I wanted to have this show, because I agree with you. I don't hear people talking about it, and it worries me a lot. And so Marcos is talking about shrinking his carbon footprint. He's talking about the coal trains. In our area right now, a lot of our electricity comes from the gnarly coal factories. And that's why he's specifically referencing coal. You know, in our house, we have laundry lines set up in the basement, too. We have been drying our clothes on the laundry lines for years and years, and simple things to do to head off climate change. He's talking about the prevention of it. And Marcos, because you called and you said you're a white male, I'm just going to roll this out. The white male effect in climate change. It's considered to be this phenomenon where the more people listen to television news about climate change, the more complacent they get about it. And it's because when you hear on specifically CNN and Fox News, when they've had people for the past, I don't know how many years, talking about global warming and climate change, they have white conservative white males, okay, talking about it on the air and minimizing it. So when the white male effect is looking at the preponderance of conservative white men who have been climate change deniers this whole entire time, and sort of the slowing down of any kind of understanding or response about it, and goes back to what Marcos said. I don't hear people talking casually about it, even though, check it out, Marcos, in the mid-90s in Chicago, they had a heat wave that was so bad, and it wasn't even really that hot. It was like 106 degrees for 5 days in a row with nighttime temperatures between 80 and 90, right? It was Chicago. Almost more than 850 people died of heat in their homes, a lot of them in their homes or in care facilities, right? Because they didn't feel comfortable opening their windows or going outside because it was Chicago and they were afraid of crime. And so because they were in Chicago and afraid of crime, they were in this big, what's called an urban heat sink. Urban heat sinks, where there's more concrete than green space. They make the hot air hotter, and they make it harder for the people that live there to cool down. And right there, that one thing right there is going to impact a hell of a lot of people in our area. It already is impacting people. So, and then who demographically cares the most about climate change? I found a whole bunch of studies yesterday that showed Black people in the United States care the most about climate change. And I went, what is that? That's like an Avon survey. I don't believe that. What is that about? But check it out. You go online, you look up images of climate change or whatever. What do you see? You see the people that were displaced, as Joanne talked about, from the Ninth Ward in New Orleans. You see the people from the people who were impacted by Hurricane Sandy. Now, it's true that rich people that sold lobsters to people. Now, I'm being rude, a little bit rude. In Red Hook, the people that sold lobsters, you know, there are those people as well. But like Joanne said, so many people in public housing are still being impacted. Places where the electricity still doesn't work. And the other piece of that, which is completely fascinating, is the research that shows who contributes to climate change the most in the United States. It's considered that African-American people are among the groups that contribute the least to climate change. Stuff is fascinating. I never thought much about it. So we started out talking about Multnomah County's the Climate Change and Public Health Preparation Plan, an assessment of public health impacts of climate change and actions to protect our health. They came out with this report a couple weeks ago. They've built the entire thing around what's called climate change equity. So I want you to plant that seed in your mind, climate change equity, because in a lot of places, and in Chicago as well, it's not just people of color, but it's poor people that are impacted by the heat waves, okay, the hurricane damage, and the lack of rebuilding after those things happen, right? This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. Today, we're having open forum on climate change. Is it possible to really prepare for it? And is there any way to head off the worst damage? What are you doing in your own home and neighborhood? 503-231-8187. And we have another caller on the air. We have John on the air. John, what's going on?
Hi, Lisa. This is John down in Kings Valley, Oregon. And my partner and I moved from Portland to Kings Valley, which is about half an hour northwest of Corvallis as the crow flies. So we got here, and without us really being in this house, it was using 22 kilowatt hours a day. And we wanted to do some farming, so we hooked up some 1,000-watt halide grow lights and We used the existing 1.5 horsepower AC pump, and so the first growing season, our electrical usage jumped up to like 60 to 80 kilowatt hours a day. So my long-range plans were to do something about that. So I removed the electric water heater. I put in a solar water heater. Got rid of the old washing machine that used 70 gallons of water per load, and all of the solar hot water heater that my solar hot water would create, and got a front loader. There was a number of other things. My mom had given us an upright freezer, which used 3.5 kilowatt hours a day, and we got a chest freezer that used 0.5 kilowatt hours a day.
Mm. So you literally look, so you're also that place where you're looking at your carbon footprint, and at the same time, I get the sense that this is what I want to ask you. Sometimes I know that in the past, like maybe 5 years ago and 10 years ago, retrofitting your house for solar actually was really pretty costly. And people who did that were taking a financial hit, you know, for the planet. So I just recently read that in the past year, the cost for solar panels and stuff for your home, that some kind of breakthrough has been reached in terms of retrofitting your home for solar, that it's more cost effective for you. So talk a little bit now, as you brought in your solar water heater, you brought in your solar, does it cost more, or is that like something that pencils out? How does that work financially?
Well, I think these days, photovoltaic, turning sun into electricity, is definitely pencils out, because you can get solar panels for $1 a watt, and they used to be way more expensive than that. Solar thermal has always penciled out. Getting heat to heat your water from the sun is always penciled out. So just to finish the story, these days we're using about 4 kilowatt hours a day, and we have solar irrigation. That helped a lot. We have a hoop house. We don't have to use those big grow lights. I've pretty much done all the efficiency replacements that I can do. Insulated the roof. We have a composting toilet, so we use human manure as fertilizer. The carbon contributor is we have a wood stove, so we burn wood.
Right.
The wood, however, comes from slash piles from clear cutting operations or other places where they would have just burned it in the open atmosphere. So, you know, we're still emitting, but
you're sort of offsetting a little bit there.
Well, at least we're getting some use out of it instead of just polluting the air and putting carbon in the air.
Right. We have at our house, we got a wood stove insert that it came from Canada. I don't mean to be weird, but when I was shopping for wood stove inserts, I was specifically looking at for one from Canada, because they have they have more stringent air pollution standards. So the thing comes, it came with a little scrubber in it. It's got, theoretically, I mean, I can't tell by looking at it if it's actually doing that. And I mean, we are polluting the air, but it is my understanding, as per the documentation, that we're polluting it less than we would have if we were just burning it in the fireplace or if we had got a different kind of. So anyway, but John, I really want to thank you for calling. John is filled with great ideas, and actually also the concept of moving outside of Portland is another one of those interesting ideas. I'd love to hear from people that are thinking of moving out of the city in preparation for, you know, some sort of future where our environment changes even more than it is already changing. 503-231-8187. Here's another one. Remember when we used to have the 9/11 truthers, and here in the local area, they split off and one branch of them became sort of like survivalist type people. I wouldn't mind hearing from some people from that movement, because you must be sitting back and laughing at how far ahead of the curve you are with some of this stuff. 503-231-8187. And we have, I'm sorry, who do we have on the air? Natano on the phone. Natano, thank you so much for calling. What's going on with you?
I think it's important to come up with a more accurate term for climate change. It's more like climate collapse. And if we start calling it climate collapse, it kind of, you know, it kind of demonstrates a little more sense of urgency of the situation. But as far as this, you know, survivalist thing and, you know, thriving after post-Armageddon, that stuff is all going to go away as soon as our grid goes down, because we've got 104 Fukushima-style reactors that are going to explode if, you know, the grid goes down. So it's going to be just a matter of a few years, max, if we don't start dealing with our nuclear problems. But the good news is I went down to Killeen, Texas, and put solar panels on all the mess halls down there, and they were just amazed that you could heat your water with the sun. And the military is now adopting more of a pro-solar attitude in terms of, like, heating water, like the thermal side of it, because Halliburton charges about $20 a gallon to deliver fuel to these forward operating bases and all these sandy spots that we're, you know, extracting oil from. And at $18 an hour, you can have a solar system, a thermal solar system, pay for itself in 3 days in these areas. So, you know, this whole thing about solar not paying back fast enough, what's the half-life of cesium dumping into the ocean?
Well, actually, Natano, what the thing about that is, and the reason I was bringing that up is, I'm going to say like 5 years ago and then also 10 years ago, I knew people that wanted to put solar on their houses, and what they found was that it cost like $50,000. So they couldn't really afford it. And so people were talking about, you can spend all this money for the solar stuff, but if it doesn't pencil out for you, then are you getting ripped off or not? That's what I'm talking about. And what, of course, I hear what you're saying, you know, well, you know, for the people who can afford $50,000 to do something to their house, the roof of their house is great. But, you know, I'm not but worrying about whether the fallout from Japan is gonna melt our skin off is a whole other level of worry. But I want to. Yes, sir.
As far as the cost of $50,000, I've been in solar for 22 years. If you go to a rebuilded center, get a double pane slider door, a piece of metal stud and a piece of a solid styrofoam, and you have some hose and you paint it black and you serpentine it through the you paint everything black in the, you know, you make a little box out of the steel stud frame, that's your rim, and all you got to do is make something dark and cover it with glass so it's somewhat insulated, and get a little pump that's powered by the sun, so when the sun's out and it's bright enough to run the pump, it'll circulate the water through your tank. Then you need to come up with an extra tank or a heat exchanger, which, you know, they're cheap. The problem with, or the reason why solar systems are so expensive, is because there are intentional roadblocks that are introduced by mostly Republicans, but it's, you know, it's kind of across the board in terms of
politics,
the politics behind it. Because, you know, when you get up there, Democrats and Republicans, there's really no difference. And so what they do is the playing field is so tilted towards fossil fuels.
It really is. I think
that,
you're right.
You know, the tax incentives, all these free, big free subsidies go to fossil fuels, where if you're going to do a solar thermal system on your house, you've got to basically rebuild your roof and do all these things that you wouldn't have to do if you wanted to put a jacuzzi on
it. No kidding.
So, I mean,
which is using more than electricity.
There's a lot of intentional roadblocks that have been put in place to slow solar down.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And people, if they want to make their own solar hot water, it is not very difficult.
Hey, Natano, I want to ask you this. So if people are excited about that, is there a place that they would go to get more basic information that you would recommend? Like, I'm thinking, I'm not even going to ask you if there's a website people can go to learn how to build something like that, but it's like Popular Mechanics. Is there some place people can go to learn basic solar, like what you're talking about?
Yeah, I'd be glad to provide a resource, but if you just probably YouTube cheap solar water heater. It'll show you, there's a ton of them on YouTube on how to build your own cheap solar heaters.
And that's awesome.
The key is if you have a little panel that can run a little pump, if it's bright enough to run the pump. It's going to be bright enough to heat that water. So
that's cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for calling, Natano.
Keep up the good work.
He knows things. That's how I kind of, I'm psyched about the gearheads calling and saying, you know, take a potato, stick a hose in it. And I mean, I don't know. Anyway, Natano's calling. He's talking about how basic you could be in building your own solar grid. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We do not have a guest today. You, our listeners, are the guests. And we're talking about climate change. Rarely in our lifetimes do we see such a direct link between the local and the global. So climate change, is it possible to really prepare for it? And is there any way to head off the worst damage already in our neighborhoods? What are you doing, listeners? 503-231-8187. I'm going to go back to the phone lines. Lee, I believe we have Lee on the phone. What's going on?
Hi, Lisa.
Hey.
I'm going to try so you don't crawl under the desk.
Are you going to scare us now?
You mentioned Kmart.
And
their roof, are you aware of the fallacy of corporate conservation?
Greenwashing for sure. And I you know, again, to me what's interesting about that is not that Kmart did it, and I'm not a Kmart shopper, I'm not going there or anything like that, but what fascinates me is what Marco talked about, or was it John? No, it was Marco. People don't talk about this stuff casually in conversations.
Well, of course not, but the fallacy of corporate conservation is that, you know, for example, the electric companies to suggest that we use less electricity, you know, to conserve is antithetical to corporate profits. And if they're not maximizing corporate profits, they're not providing for their shareholders. And their boards and their executive officers are in violation and can be removed.
I hear you. I already knew, man. I'm totally with you, Lee.
And you know,
Lee, let me ask you this. What are you doing right now in your house, in your life?
Sitting around being cold because, you know, basically, well, I live on 21 acres, okay, that I'm trying to put into permanent conservation easement, but dealing with the government is, you know, just absolutely crazy. They're not interested because I don't have a large enough piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to reduce, you know, our carbon consumption by about 80% if we're going to be effective.
Right.
And that is huge lifestyle changes.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to do it for a number of years, and I'm maybe at 20%.
Yeah, I actually feel as though, as I was digging deeply into these issues yesterday, I feel as though I specifically saw that statistic in multiple places. And interestingly, there are a number of municipal governments, New York, as well as, I believe, Oregon and the Portland government, where they've actually rolled out plans like a few years ago, to do that exact thing. But then it just sort of hangs by spit. Like, how do you do it is the
right,
fascinating thing. And it basically comes down to us.
Well, are you willing to reduce your carbon consumption by 80%?
I'm totally open to it. We at our house, we do a number of things as well, and then we look at each other. We don't know if we're having any impact at all because nobody talks about it in our regular conversations. You know what I'm saying? But what, you know, Lee, let me ask you this. So if we're all here, we're all talking about this issue. It's
uh-huh.
already here. In just a few minutes, I'll talk about a little bit some of the impacts we're already seeing. But in your opinion, what do you think is the single biggest change that everyday people could make in our lives to get to that 80% carbon reduction number?
Stop consuming.
Okay.
I mean, stop consuming. Stop buying things that you don't need. It's need. And we have to change our attitudes about what we actually need. I mean, how many pairs of shoes does the average woman have in Oregon?
Sexist. How about men? I know some male MLDs out there. Go ahead, though.
You know, you only have 2 feet. How many pairs of shoes do you need?
Okay. Going back to consumption, I totally respect that. Because that actually goes back to the point you were making about the fallacy of corporate conservation. Because the way that Kmart destroys the planet in the production of all these shoes is actually the point. And it's Portland, so that's obviously why they did a green roof, to get people to ride their bikes out there and buy stuff.
But it's a drop in, you know, when we need, you know, huge changes. think about how, you know, I don't want to scare people, but, you know, Native Americans lived on this land for, you know, tens of thousands of years, and how, what was their lifestyle like? You know, and how did they survive? Well, you know, they were cold for periods of time in the winter. They didn't have air conditioning. You know, they didn't drive monster trucks.
All right, Lee, I get it. And Lee's brought some super duper important points out. Thank you so much.
Carbon sequestration is the other issue.
Oh, okay, I'm just going to write that down, carbon sequestration. We have a full slate of callers. Let's try to get some more callers on the phone. Carbon sequestration, that's fascinating. I'm sorry, Terry is next. Perry, you're on the phone, dude.
Harry, yeah. Hi,
Harry.
Third
time's a charm. Harry, welcome to KBOO.
Okay, thanks. I'd like to make a comment and your opinion on climate change and how climate disasters, after climate disasters, we have economic disasters. I'll give you four things in our history. In 1906, we had the San Francisco earthquake. In 1907, we had an economic crash. In 1927, the Mississippi River flooded and destroyed a lot of communities. In 1929, we had the stock market crash. In 1980, Mount St. Helens blew up. And what it did was it closed the Columbia River for 4 or 5 years from barge traffic and shipping traffic. And the Columbia River is the biggest river in the western part of the United States. So that kind of caused an economic downturn that we had in 1981 and 82. And then, of course, the 2005 Katrina. Well, remember, a whole city was completely destroyed, and surrounding communities, not only in Louisiana, but also in Mississippi and parts of Florida. That probably had a lot to cause with the 2008 recession that we're going through right now.
It's interesting, Harry, because, I mean, I hear what you're saying. We don't even really talk about some of these impacts, really. And we just look at them as, oh, my God, it's like a lightning strike. It's like it's a random event. But these things are not really random events, and they have long-lasting impacts. And I hear what you're saying about the economic disasters as well, because as who was it Lee was talking about, or was it Natano? When you see, and Joanne also talked about it, when you see all of the damage, part of this economic disaster that comes after is who helps rebuild. And I mean, I think that I'm just going to tack a little tail to the end of what you're saying is, when we see these climate change, and I'm specifically talking about climate change, I'm not even talking about the San Francisco earthquake, right? But when we see these extreme weather events happen, poverty falls in their wake, and people make money off of it, and a lot of people lose money. And one of the things that surprised me in the reading I was doing yesterday was, again, we don't really talk about these things, although you see the extreme headlines and we go, wow, that was close. We didn't get hit by that. There's all kinds of other unintended consequences for the people involved, and a lot of them are economic. Also, mental health is impacted for wide swaths of people that would not have otherwise be impacted by mental health problems. It's amazing the unintended consequences. Like, I had never thought about it. Harry, I want to ask you, where are you from? Are you from the West Coast or from the East Coast or from the Midwest?
Well, I was born on the East Coast, but I lived here on the West Coast in Portland since I was 10 years old.
Keep going.
Yeah, so I consider myself an Oregonian.
I'm sure there's some people that are going to say, oh, you're a newcomer. You know how we are in Portland. We're just weird up that way. I want to ask you this. Are you doing anything in your house, or do you feel as though there's anything that we can do around protecting our own neighborhoods in a climate change environment?
Policy changes and getting the right people in to make these policy changes. But for me, the only thing I can really do is recycle. That's all I can really do. I'm disabled and, you know, lived on a fixed income, so that's probably all I can do. But probably best is political, getting the right people in there to make these changes.
All right. What part of town do you live in, Harry?
I live in East Portland.
Okay.
Out by Gresham Way.
All right. I'm just, because you brought it up, you know, what can people do? I want to go through a few of the things that Multnomah County did in there. The Multnomah County Health Department is one of my favorite government agencies anywhere. And I know, I was surprised at how much work the city, the state, and the county have been doing on climate change for years now. Again, we don't talk about it at cocktail parties. I'm not the cocktail party queen, to be honest with you, but we should probably be talking about it. But Harry, now this is the thing. We need to be making sure that you're safe. Okay. So one of the biggest worries that Multnomah County Health Department put out is that all of us in our local neighborhoods, we need to make friends with all of our neighbors and make sure that we have everybody's contact information. And when these big rolling, what's expected is big rolling heat waves, okay? Heat waves in the summer that are going to last longer and they're going to be hotter. We had 115 degrees in Portland in 2009, right? We need to make sure that all the people who that are not that mobile, like my mother-in-law, who's 80, I believe she's turning 80. She just turned 80 this year. We have to make sure people have some kind of air conditioning or air conditioner or cooling unit in their house. People who cannot go outside, we need to make sure they have some kind of cooling unit in their house, right? And people that are in adult foster care, adult care facilities, we need to really link arms around those people because it's like the people who are elderly, people who are disabled are the people, and people with asthma, diabetes, and heart disease are going to really be affected by this urban heat island sink effect. So, Harry, you know, we need to make sure that we're checking on you, okay? So I want to thank you for calling, Harry.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm so glad Harry called. The other thing, you know, we have a few more callers. There's a few, I just want to go, just jump ahead a little bit. We've got 15 minutes left in the show. I'm just saying, as a reporter that sits in a fire hose of information every day, day in and day out, every week, every month, all year long, I'm seeing that one of the things that Multnomah County talked about was a difference in bugs. Different bugs in your house, different bugs around with the hotter temperatures overall. And they're saying that, I believe they're saying that Multnomah County has now seen a degree and a half of warming in the past, is it 10 years? And it doesn't seem like very much, but it totally adds up. So we're seeing more and different bugs, right? Including the fleas that are attacking your kitty and your puppy. I was reading these reports and I was like, you know, I haven't been able to find a flea treatment that works in years. And I spend all this incredible money on this flea treatment stuff that doesn't work at all. So look, fleas all over the country, fleas are out of control already. Okay. Another one is kitten season. Now, I get press releases from all of the animal shelters in Oregon, in northwestern Oregon, southwest Washington. And this year, the Southwest Washington Humane Society, it's October, and they're still having kitten season. Normally, kitten season takes place in August. Okay. So we're seeing that specifically with cats. I don't think dogs are affected the same way, that the rise in heat is having an impact on the reproduction. So if we're talking about the cat pound, the dog pound, things like that, that means your taxpayer money's already going towards trying to take care of the excess kitty population. Okay. And that's just things that I've seen. Actually, we've been watching in my front yard where we have a great big veggie garden and we don't use pesticides or chemicals at all. We've made friends with a gigantic praying mantis. It's like 8 inches long. We've been hanging out with this praying mantis for the past 2 weeks. She comes over. She hangs out with us. If we try to move towards her, take a picture, she puts her wings out and freaks us out. But that's a big praying mantis. We've never seen that in our yard, although I know they live in our climate. So summers that are way hotter, they don't cool off at night, rolling heat waves, and then winters where it just rains all the time. It's warm rain all winter, okay? That's what we're seeing. Already we're seeing it. So this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. Open forum. We're talking about climate change and what's happening in your yard, in your house, in your neighborhood, what you can do. So we're going back to the phone lines. We have Steve on the phone. Steve, what's going on?
Hi there. Hi, I have 2 points to make. One of them is from the 70s. That there were two projects to produce completely sustainable homes. That's completely passive heated, cooled, recycled water, all of this, and both exhibits were called The Home of the Future. Now, the one in Sweden, Sunny Sweden, had a question mark at the end. The one in Sunny California had an exclamation point. The Swede was an architect who retrofitted a two-bedroom trailer and completely made it self-sustaining, a greenhouse, and everything, for about $60,000. That's 1970 dollars, mid-1970 dollars. The one in California was a $3 million sprawling three-bedroom ranch house that was, you know, had computer-controlled, you know, solar panels and this, that, and the other thing, and all the computer glitches that caused it to fail. And that had the exclamation point. That was $3 million in mid-1970s dollars. So just a difference in outlook. In other words, in America, we can build these things, but we know that they're just expensive toys, like the high-speed train that can only get up to high speed for 18 miles. For myself, I've lived in Salem for quite a while. I lived in an apartment and paid PG&E, and then my bill was about $24-25. Hello?
Yes, sir. Keep going. You're good.
Okay. Anyway, I'm going to go with that. Bye now.
All right. Thanks for calling. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We are talking about climate change. Steve brought up this thing. This is a thing that fascinates me the most. Everywhere you look, every time there's a map, okay, of people impacted by these extreme heat events, extreme weather events. The place where people are impacted the most, basically for the most part, and you know what? It's true. There's a few places where people have vacation homes, and those homes have been wiped out by hurricanes, and it's rich people, right? Steve's bringing this up. You know, you got your sustainable homes. You got your home in Sweden. You got your $3 million 1970 home in California. $3 million in 1970s. Wow. That was like, I'm just going to speculate, $20 million now. I just pulled that out of my head. That's crazy. Everywhere you go, when we're talking about climate change, poor people are hurt the most. And we see where rich people can afford to keep from being inconvenienced by it in every way, okay, but not poor people. And as I've been discussing, the Multnomah County Health Department, it's called the Climate Change and Public Health Preparation Plan. I have been remiss in not bringing out one of the most important communities that is going to be most impacted by global warming, and that is going to be the houseless communities. Okay. In California, where they had a terrible heat wave 3 years ago, where I believe it got to be as hot as a rock in the 120 range, many people living in tents died from the heat. And the irony is that, again, we're talking about a situation that was created by fossil fuels. And if we don't figure out a way to cool down a lot of vulnerable populations of people, they're going to die disproportionately. Well, where's the energy going to come from to cool the people down? So what I would personally like to see is a situation where we're not burning more fossil fuels to theoretically protect ourselves from the impact of having burned too many fossil fuels. That's just my personal trip about it. And so let's go back to the phone lines. We have Vernon on the phone. Vernon, what's going on?
Good morning, Lisa. As you know, I bike for peace. Since 2006, I've ridden my bicycle through 33 different states.
Right.
And it's been really good for me.
Yeah, looking at the carbon footprint thing, like what we can do about global climate, like global warming in our house right now, the biking thing, it's always surprising. It's such an obvious thing to do because how many of us pay money to go to a gym? You know
right.
what I'm saying?
We do need to get fit for the struggle. We're going to have to be in good shape.
Yeah, that's factually true.
I didn't make that up, by the way. That one comes from Cindy Sheehan.
It's absolutely true, though.
Who recently rode her bike across country.
It's deeply true that we do need to be fit for the revolution or for the future of any sort, because it is the people with the health problems due to not being fit that are really going to be impacted as well. But keep going.
You were asking about how to keep cool with a low-carbon method, and there happens to be a really great method that's been around forever. It's called a tree. Shade cools us. Trees moderate the climate. The more trees we plant, the more moderate our climate will be.
You know, Vernon, I'm so glad you said that, because I went to this press conference where Multnomah County Health Department rolled out this thing about what people could, would, should be doing in their own local neighborhoods. And there is a map, right? This group, Friends of Trees, I think they're operating on that map, too. I haven't sat down with them yet, but I'm going to. And when you look at, and who was it? Was it Harry? No. Yeah, it was Harry, who said he's from East County. There's not enough trees out there. So if you're living in an apartment complex, just to take one example, where there's almost no trees, I mean, Vernon, I looked at that and I was kind of like, we need Bud Clark to step up with a bigger tree planting thing. Friends of Trees was kind of started by Bud Clark, who saw that there weren't enough trees in Northwest Portland, I think in the 70s. But Vernon, thank you. I mean, you talk about carbon offset, low carbon, low tech, plant more trees. And I think if people do that now, it could actually have a significant impact within 5 to 10 years, which is when some of the worst impacts are going to hit us with the heat.
Right.
What else, Vernon? Are you planting trees? Are you planting trees out there?
Well, I planted a few. I live in a forest, so, you know, it pretty much plants itself.
Yeah.
We've planted a few trees in strategic places food. But.
I'd really like to enlist Solve, which is, I think, one of the trips that they do is they go plant trees in the forest. I'd really like to enlist Solve and some of these groups like that and have them start planting trees in the suburbs and start planting trees in public housing complexes, like you said. I was talking earlier about this heat wave in Chicago, the great Chicago heat wave of 1995. And they're saying that there had been a similar heat wave in Chicago in 1930, but that in 1930, way fewer people died because they slept outside where they could sleep under trees and by the river. And people did not feel comfortable doing that in 1995 because their urban area was too dangerous and they didn't feel comfortable doing that. And they didn't have trees planted right there outside.
There's also a great way to make your area less dangerous. See, it's a fact that 99% of the violence in America is on television. So you don't need to kill any of your neighbors. What you need to do is kill your television.
Thank you for calling, Vernon. I like Vernon's take. I like his suggestions. A great way to make your neighborhood less violent is to turn the television off. I think that's absolutely... I'm going to think about that for a long time. So let's go back to the phone lines. We've got a few more callers. We have Sandy on the phone. Sandy, what are you thinking about today?
Well, I'm thinking all these suggestions for individual action, like planting trees and putting solar in your house and, hanging your laundry on the line are great, and people should do them, and I try to do them myself. But what's really important is political action. We're never going to solve the climate problem with individual action. It needs to be combined with political action. And people in Portland can do that by joining 350pdx.org.
That's the Bill McKibben organization. And also
it
check
is.
Out.
We have a local and it here, and it's very active. It's working on fossil fuel divestment, both government and faith-based, not both, in all government. Faith-based and in colleges and universities, and it's involved in actions against the fossil fuel terminals and shipping. And it's a great way to get involved in climate change actions and political work and meet other people, work with them.
Sandy, and also PortlandRisingTide.org is another place to hook up with the same group of people.
Quite the same group of people, but they do work together.
The same issue. Sandy, I have an ulterior motive for bringing up this personal aspect, right, for this show today, because I want to do a lot more shows about this issue. I think it's impacting us already, has been for years. And again, it's just like someone said earlier this hour, I don't hear everyday people talking about this. I don't hear people talking about how they're affected. And I read the article in the Oregonian after the health department came out with their report, and also Oregon Public Broadcasting, who I really like a lot. And they're talking about in the future, climate change, bubbity bubbity ba. And it's like, no, this is now. It's already happening.
Oh, absolutely.
I really
I'm not saying people shouldn't do. I think it's their individual things. I think
right. It's
really important for us to diminish the demand for fossil fuels, and we can do that through individual action. But it's just that individual action is never going to be enough. Right. We have to organize and work together. And I think we all understand that.
I think you're absolutely right. And so the other part of this issue, and then I'm going to move on to another caller. But
sure.
I hear so many people who feel like a number of people have already said today, there's nothing we can do. The bad guys have already won. I will be the first to admit that in many cases, yes, I think that also that the bad guys have already won in many different cases. And yet I feel as though I feel personal imperative to try to get people to not feel so hopeless about this, to get people to feel like, yes, it's affecting me. I can see how it's affecting me. And this is what I'm going to do. And thank you so much, Sandy, for calling. I love it when you call. Call anytime. And she brought that up about 350.org if you want to take political action, or 350.org or PortlandRisingTide.org. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We have Janine on the phone. Janine, what's going on?
Hi. I was a young adult during the Back to the Land movement in the 70s.
Foxfire.
So, you know, we were trying to minimize our footprint on the planet through self-sufficiency. And, you know, I don't live in the country anymore. I live here in Oregon City, but I still try to live by the precepts of voluntary simplicity and, you know, by conserving energy and buying things secondhand and minimizing driving and turning down the thermostat. But I, too, realize, you know, that a lot of it is about what we do as a community and what's going on politically. So we've been doing things like having potluck get-togethers at our house where our neighbors come over and we share good food together and we talk about how to live more sustainably, you know, right where we are.
All right. That's great.
And I've created a website. It's called naturallypeaceful.com. It's like a DIY guide to what we can do to live more lightly on the planet.
I'm going to check that out. That's great. So thank you so much for calling, Janine.
I have one more thing, though, I'd like to say.
Quick.
Main thing I'm concerned about right now is Blue Heron Paper Mill closed down here in Oregon City. And there's this visioning process to, you know, create something totally different from an industrial site. But about half of the 23 acres is in the floodplain. And they want to rebuild in the floodplain. So friends and I are trying to convince the powers that be to restore it to its natural state. Because with climate change, there's going to be more frequent and intense storms and flooding.
It's true. And I have to cut you off there. But I'm going to try to reach out to you and bring you back on the air. Because this issue of of development and the impact that development specifically has on the damage that people endure on these extreme events is really a big deal. So let's go for that last caller. We have LJ. LJ, you're taking us out. You're taking us out, LJ.
Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I'm fine.
Great. Thank you for opening up this dialogue. Lisa, just to plant an idea, can we talk about the impact of the capitalist model and the environmental issues that we suffer at this moment? The bottom line, obviously, is a lot more important than saving the environment. And I just have a couple of quick things to bring up. I just recently saw a documentary called Who Killed the Electric Car?
An awesome film.
Very, very awesome. And the electric car was a very good idea that the capitalist model had to destroy because it was too good of an idea.
All right, LJ, I got to cut you loose. Got to go. Sorry, call sooner next time, LJ. He probably hung on the line for a long time. That's it for our show. Find out more about global warming by going outside and talking to your neighbors. What do you think about that? Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will be podcast on KBOO.FM. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discussed on the show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Stay tuned for political perspectives with more information about climate control and nuclear weapons. Thanks for listening.
Listening public, the other point of view.
There was a strong sense that this was the beginning of something that would spread across the country.
On Sunday, November 3rd, at the historic Hollywood Theater, KBOO presents an exclusive benefit screening of the film KPFA On the Air.
This documentary tells the powerful story of the beginnings of listener-sponsored radio in the United States with the birth of Pacifica in Berkeley in 1949.
KPFA On the Air chronicles the origins of the free speech movement, the first stirrings of the student movements at Berkeley, and opposition to the Vietnam War in the early 1960s.
Eventually spawning a network of free-form, independent radio stations across the country, including KBOO, which came on the air in 1968. So come join us at the Hollywood Theater, Northeast 41st and Sandy Boulevard, Sunday, November 3rd, at 7 in the evening.
Help keep community radio strong and thriving into the future.
Muertos Northwest invites you to the 5th annual Dia de los Muertos celebration, Saturday, November 2nd, at the Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street, Portland, under the Hawthorne Bridge. Celebration of life and death. Come help the spirits of your loved ones return with their favorite food, drinks, and plenty of dancing. Bring an item to add to the community altar. Muertos face painting for the young and old, sugar skull decorating, hot chocolate and pan dulce will be served. Come check out Mariachi Portland, Conjunto Alegre, and Rafa and the Deadliest Catch Band. Come for the Muertos, stay for the food. Food, drinks, and dancing. Sponsored in part by KBOO, Tequila Cuervo, and Cover Oregon. Visit Facebook Muertos Northwest.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Political Perspectives, and coming up on this program, we'll hear from investigative journalist Eric Schlosser, who will be talking about his new book, Command and Control. Later in the hour, we'll hear from activist and author Madea Benjamin speaking about what must the movement against drones do to succeed. At 10, it's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre.